heart. I shook the images out of my head, and my eyes landed on a small, unimpressive wooden door nestled in the corner. Where do you think that leads? The king's quarters, but I don't have a way in there. I hummed my understanding, but my thoughts were elsewhere. There was something startlingly erotic about thinking of Cain's bedroom, what he did in there when he was completely alone, how he slept, who he thought of. I tried not to shiver. It probably looked like the dungeons or his throne room, all stone and steel. A dark, cold room for a dark, cold person. I could hear Mari's eye roll in her voice. You are King Crazy. I flushed at the realization that I had been gazing longingly at a wooden door. All right. She approached the desk. Briar's amulet, where are you? Before I could join her, a haunting cry, like a widow's wail, cut through the room. A scream lodged in my throat at the sound, and Mari and I both whirled around, caught. A feathered creature prowled out from behind the love seat, stretching like it might have been asleep. It was a strange, gangly thing that stared back at us. At first glance, it seemed like a large owl. But upon closer inspection, I recoiled from beady, human-like eyes and bony shoulders that folded underneath its raven-feathered wings. It crept toward us with impish delight, lanky legs, and a twitching cock of its head, as if said owl had mated with an underfed, demonic child. It halted, regarding us peculiarly, then squawked again, revealing rows and rows of pointed white teeth. Mari, is that Cain's pet? My voice didn't sound like my own. Yes, can you distract it? I'm almost done. She was pushing through every drawer of the desk, rummaging for the locket. The owl thing hooted again and stretched its clawed feet. Unblinking eyes bored into me, following my every move. Distract it? Mari! I hissed. It's just a Strix. If it was going to eat us, it would have already. I released some of the tension in my locked-up knees and clenched jaw. Oh, so they don't eat humans? Her voice was an echo, the result of her head being deep underneath the cavity of the wood. No, they absolutely do. But he hasn't yet, so... I sucked in a shaking breath. This woman was out of her mind. Good owl creature. What lovely fangs you have. Was this distracting? I tried to speak affectionately, as I would have with bells and hooves back home. It came out harried and unhinged. The creature only inched closer. Its eyes had gone predatory, the three spindly fingers of its ghoulish claws reaching outward. My breath was coming in uneven bursts. Mari, come on, now. Almost done, she grunted, her voice muffled. The Strix, still staring daggers into my soul, spread its wings wide, the feathers inky black and sleek, as if they had been dipped in oil. I jumped backward at the sight. Ah, found it. At Mari's exclamation, the owl-like being flashed its teeth once more and charged at me. Heart thumping in my ears, I ran for the secret entrance, burying myself against the wall and faintly making out Mari's low hum behind me. The rush of wind at my back had me spinning around, and I watched as the Strix shot up into the air with a strangled hoot, suspended there and thrashing. Bleeding stones. I slumped with relief, supporting my body's weight against the hidden door and sucking in the musty air of the study. Are you doing that? I motioned toward the Strix, fighting to get back down from its hovering spot in midair. Yes! Mari cried, running over to me. A thin leather rope held a purple gem around her neck. Holy stones! I can feel her power. I can't believe it. That is so great. I'm thrilled for you. But I looked up at the hovering beast, angling down to swipe at us, but unable to move. What do we do about that? We can't leave him up there. Sure we can. I shot her a glare. No, we can't. I couldn't do that to Cain, or the creature, no matter how much it had wanted to eat my eyeballs and feast on my flesh. At least, that was what I felt like it had been trying to communicate to me. Bring him down, and we'll run out before he can get us. Mari frowned, but held the amulet tightly against her chest with determination. She focused on the swatting, squawking owl, and began a haunting chant under her breath. Seeing magic done was always awe-inspiring, even when I was shaking so hard my jaw hurt. The static wind, the slight hum in the air, our town dressmaker's little spell to get a bottle of dye from a high shelf, a brief enchantment by a barkeep on a drunken patron to help him leave without trouble. It had never looked as raw or visceral as what Mari was doing. She continued her chant, but the creature didn't budge. Mari and I exchanged a look of concern. The Strix looked concerned as well, cocking his feathered head. The thump of footsteps echoed through the wooden door, the one that led to Kane's bedroom. All three of us whirled at the sound and the filtered noises of men next door seeping inside. "And Eric seems pleased with our offer," Kane's deep, unmistakable voice. "We may have an ally yet, and just in the nick of time." "That's a stretch," Griffin's voice.
"Oh, for stone's sake, Mari, try again," I hissed. I didn't know what it said about me, but I was significantly more terrified of running into Kane than I was of death by Strix.
"Always so upbeat, Commander. Can't we have one meager success?"
Griffin scoffed through the wall.
"Fine, but what about Amelia?"
Kane's casual laugh carried through the door into my bones. My face heated. I did not want to hear more of their conversation. Mari's face scrunched up as she continued to chant the spell, grasping at the amulet around her neck.
"Griff, do you honestly think, with all that is at stake right now, that—"
The Strix hooted loudly, flapping its staggering plumes against the magical strain. Oh, stones. My heart was in my throat. I was choking on it. We had to leave right now.
"What is that?"
The thumps of guards' boots were a steady rhythm from the king's room heading toward us.
"Mari!"
I hissed. Suddenly, Mari's hold on the Strix released, and the creature fell halfway from the lofted ceiling to the ground, catching itself mere inches from the floor, with outspread wings and murder in its eyes. Mari and I slipped through the alcove right before the guards pushed in, or the owl-like creature could have us for dinner. We heaved twin sighs of relief in the hallway and walked as fast as looked natural in the other direction. When we rounded the corner, I was practically vibrating with anger.
"Mari, that was...
I am so sorry, Arwen," she said before turning her chestnut eyes on me. "It was so dangerous and completely stupid. I can't believe you agreed to it, honestly." I could feel my all-too-familiar headache returning.
"You almost got us killed," I snipped. "How could you think—"
I snapped my mouth shut as we passed by two strolling sentries in the torch-lit hall. Mari and I smiled, warm and broad and phony as charlatans. They passed us, and I readied myself to lay into her further, but she slowed at the gallery, looking down at the people milling about the courtyard below us. She looked stricken. Had the Strix scared her that much?
"I had to get the amulet," she said. "I couldn't fail."
She turned to face me, eyes grave.
"Being good at things, knowledgeable about everything, I don't know. It's all I'm worth, I think."
Irritation still prickled at my skin, but her words made my heart hurt, too.
"Mari, that's not true, and you know it. How can you say that? I didn't have any friends here growing up. It's an army stronghold, for stone's sake. There were very few kids, and of them, the girls were sent to take classes in Willow Ridge, and the boys were taught to fight. I think Papa never sent me away because he didn't want to be alone." The image of a small, lonely Mari, red curls taking up half her face, bullied by young boy soldiers and hiding in Kane's ornate study, made me want to hug her. My mother died giving birth to me. I never knew her, but I knew from what Papa told me about her that she was a brilliant witch and good at everything else she did. He was so enamored with her, and every day growing up, he told me how alike we were. I loved reading, just like she did. It felt so good to have something that I could take pride in, feeling like she and I were the same. Then it didn't matter what anyone thought of me. I had my mind, just like my mother, and that was all I needed. I was so afraid of failing at these spells, Arwen, at failing at something she was great at that I had set my mind to, that I almost got us both killed. I am so profoundly sorry. I just didn't know who I would be if I tried witchcraft and didn't succeed. All the fury swept out of me like a snuffed candle. I knew what she meant. Maybe not about the incredible pressure she put on herself, but my childhood loneliness also led to some poor adult choices. Truthfully, had I found something when I was young that I was as great at as Mari was at academia, I might have grown up with some of the sense of self and confidence that she possessed. I turned her to face me. Mari, if you never pulled a random fact out of thin air again, or quoted a text I'd never heard of, or mastered a new spell or translation, I wouldn't think of you any differently. Your brilliance and fierce determination are only two of the many, many qualities that make you my friend. Her eyes brightened. Thanks for saying that. It's true. I'm a terrible liar. We resumed our stroll, and this time the silence was pleasant. A nightcap to accompany the balmy evening that had somehow not ended in our death. So, she said after a few minutes, are we going to talk about what we heard? My cheeks reddened. Amelia. My ego is still recovering from the fact that Cain seems to have slept with half the kingdom, including century-old witches, and shows no interest in me, I said. It was a joke, but it didn't come out like one. Mari grabbed my arm tightly and swung me into her eyeline. Let's not follow that train of thought, she said, grimacing. You don't want to be wanted by a man like that anyway. You hate him, and with good reason. Her voice was warm, yet firm. You are a bright light, Arwen, and he is not worthy of you. I nodded, but my heart had seized up in my chest. Maybe, as much as I thought Mari couldn't see herself accurately, it was possible neither could I. 13. I thwacked at the tree with all my might, but barely made a dent in the bark. Even when I imagined it was Cain's arrogant face, or someone named Amelia, my slashes were mere scratches against the wood. After all the mornings I had spent with steel in my hands, I still felt like my strength had not improved at all. I wiped the sweat from my eyes and peered up at Doggin. This isn't training. This is free labor. If you need more firewood, I bet Owen would be happy to oblige. Doggin loosed a chuckle, the novelty of which still hadn't faded. Nothing seemed to bring the curmudgeon as much joy as these morning lessons. I couldn't tell if he was secretly endeared by my learning or just a sadist. Probably both. Give me 4 more blows and we'll call it a day. I rolled my shoulders back and took the axe to the tree 4 more times, leaving a shallow gash in the wood. There you go, he praised. That's something. We'll get it down one day. I still don't understand what this has to do with sword fighting. Doggin offered me his sword in return for the axe I was holding. I made the trade and instantly felt my arm pull toward the ground. Doggin, I gasped. What is your sword made of? Bricks? I couldn't hold it even with 2 hands, let alone wield it expertly with 1. The sword you've been training with is for a child, 5 or 6 years old at best. My jaw practically unhinged. You need to grow stronger so that you can use a proper one soon. I respected his dedication to my self-defense, but the urgency was unsettling. Did he think I'd be in peril again in the near future?
despite the shudder that ran through me. I was grateful for the reminder not to get too comfortable here, that Onyx was still dangerous.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to complain. I'm just a little tired.
Late last night, I had healed two injured soldiers who had returned from a mission with significant stab wounds, and it had taken nearly everything out of me. I dropped his sword and leaned back against the marred tree. Doggin stared at me, sympathy and curiosity twisting in his expression.
Do you get tired when you work in the apothecary?
I knew confusion was written plainly across my face. Sometimes the hours are long. Why?
That's not what I mean.
Doggin took his sword back, swiping the blade across his palm.
Doggin! What?
I reached for the sword, but he swatted me away.
Here, heal this.
I narrowed my eyes at him, but followed his request. Taking his calloused hand in mine, I closed my eyes and felt the familiar tingle in my fingers.
Now I want you to try something new. Don't pull power from within, but try to harness what's around you instead.
What's around me? My eyes popped open and I scanned the area.
Like you? My sword? Not exactly. Sometimes it's water, sometimes it's earth. My guess for you is atmosphere. So try to pull the very air around you into my palm, if you can.
Doggin, cautious hope bubbled in my chest. Do you know what these powers are? I've wanted to understand my entire life. If you know something, you have to tell me.
Abington hadn't had libraries or scholars, so after exhausting all forms of research, I had given up on trying to understand this part of myself. I had even searched the Shadowhold Library a few weeks ago, to no avail. I had told myself it was better this way, that I preferred not to know. But Doggin's eyes only scanned the field around us.
This technique has helped others with their witchcraft. That's all. I thought it might be worth trying.
I knew he was keeping something from me. He wasn't as bad of a liar as I was, but it was close. I knew witches never pulled their power from air or water or earth. Mari had made it very clear, as she walked me through all of her research on her new skills, that a witch's power came from her lineage. However, when he didn't say more, I caved and gave it a shot. I imagined pulling the very air around me into his palm, sealing up the small river of blood that had spilled out. My fingers twitched, and I watched in awe as his hand found its way back together again, without leaving me exhausted or dizzy.
How?
Doggin's lips pursed in a knowing smile.
Good. That may help. Let me know.
And then he headed back to the castle. I was so sore I could hardly walk back to my room. I was going to draw myself a piping hot bath and fill it with salts from the apothecary to ease my aching muscles. Another facet of my strange powers was the ability to heal quickly. I was never sick for long, and my cuts became scars, sometimes overnight. One long bath, and I'd be good as new by tomorrow. It was an oddly cloudy day, despite the crawl towards summer, and my private washroom was dim and quiet. I lit two lanterns and a handful of candles to brighten the space and began boiling the water. The white porcelain of the clawfoot tub was cracked, and it had some rust here and there, but I had fallen a little in love with it. Back in Abington, we had a communal bathhouse, which was almost solely used by teenagers who wanted to screw away from the intrusive eyes of their parents. I tried to remember the fleeting, foreboding feeling I had when training with Doggin today, a reminder not to let my guard down completely. But my life here in Shadowhold was far more decent than I had ever imagined it could be. I had even caught myself forgetting about plotting or scheming a way to escape, enjoying Mari and Doggin's company, even Barney when I saw him in the Great Hall. I pushed back against the guilt that scratched at my heart. I was surviving. That was all I could do. Guilt had also been swimming in my mind ever since we stole Briar's amulet. I had hoped Cain wouldn't notice, that he wouldn't come after Mari for it. A small part of me hoped he wouldn't feel betrayed. The irony was so ridiculous, I nearly gave myself a headache. Once the water was close to scalding, I poured it into the tub and peeled off my sweat-stained, dirt-ridden leathers. I dipped one blistered toe into the steaming water. There wasn't a single part of me that wasn't raw and achy from the morning's exercises. Doggin was definitely a sadist. I added the salts, and the clear water bloomed milky white, smelling of eucalyptus and lilies. As I lowered myself into the tub inch by inch, at least half the tension left my body, like steam off a cup of tea in winter air. I submerged and lifted my feet out, resting them on the lip of the tub, in a position fit for a queen. I had been this sore after my foot race with Cain, too. It had been a while since I had exerted my muscles that much, but my aching legs had been far more welcome than whatever this full-body bruise from training was. Thinking of my day with Cain brought all sorts of conflicting feelings to mind. His infuriating arrogance, our argument, his stance on love and trust, but also his willingness to bring me along into the woods just because I needed to get out, our playful wager, our swim, the ride back to the castle. The thought of him behind me, glistening as the sun went down, maybe even hardening at the sensation of my body in his arms. I didn't want to feel anything for him, but I couldn't help it. The memory brought back an intense ache in my core, and my nipples pebbled even in the warm water. Alone, in the privacy of the washroom, surrounded by the candle's dim light, I allowed myself to slip a hand down my stomach and between my legs. It was an entirely different feeling thinking of Cain rather than Halden, a want so pure and demanding I couldn't bear to leave it unanswered. I thought of Cain's wicked grin, his deep and husky laugh, and the way he nearly pressed me up against the rocks in the pond. I wondered what might have happened had I not been so focused on escape. What if I had taken the sheer camisole off altogether? Would he have been able to hold himself back? Or would he have ravaged me, consuming me completely until we were one? I imagined his hands grasping at me, coaxing a moan from my lips, whispering in my ear what my most intimate sounds were doing to him. I rubbed circles between my legs, feeling the pressure build throughout my body, want pooling low in my belly. I ached for him. I wanted him to touch me so desperately, it was all-consuming. I brought my other hand up to my breast and massaged it gently, thinking of his hands, their strength, and how his rough touch would feel. He was so dangerous, so lethal. It was shameful, mortifying, how much it had begun to turn me on. As I pictured Cain, his name slipped out of my lips in a soft gasp. Even in the water, I felt wetness pooling at my center, and I pushed one finger in, slowly. I moaned, eyes screwed shut in pleasure as my release built. Withdrawing nearly to the tip before plunging back in, I imagined it was Cain's hand, using me, playing with me, wringing cries from my throat and tears of ecstasy from my eyes. Would he be rough, jaw tight, hands punishing, demanding moan after moan, sob after sob? Or would the wicked king be surprisingly gentle? Restraining himself, afraid to thrust too hard, shaking with the need to keep himself in control, my fantasies were unhinged. I was so close, I could almost feel his tongue on my neck, his grunts against me, the way I was shaken from my filthy imagination by the sound of heavy footsteps coming from my bedroom. Fear cut through me. I stood up, dousing the floor in water, prepared for whatever might come through the washroom doors. I looked around for some kind of weapon and grabbed the nearest candlestick. Arwen,
Are you a... Cain barged in, hand on his sheathed sword, but stopped short upon seeing my soaked, naked form. He made a guttural noise that sounded almost like a whimper and turned around quickly.
Fuck.
His voice cracked and he cleared his throat. Sorry. I dropped down into the tub with an ungraceful splash to hide my body.
What are you doing in here? Don't you knock?
I asked, but it came out like a shriek. I was coming to ask you a question, and then I heard... I thought you were hurt, he said to the wall, still facing away from me. I... never mind. I squirmed, still hot all over, from the steaming bath, from embarrassment, from... I shook the images of Cain's lust-soaked eyes and parted, breathless lips from my mind.
Well, I'm fine.
And you can turn back around now. Cain slowly faced me. I had wrapped my arms around my chest, and the tub covered the rest of my body. The salts had made the water opaque, like a blanket of liquid white. Somehow, he looked almost as embarrassed as I felt. A horrible thought entered my mind, and all others eddied out.
What made you think I was hurt?
I tried not to sound hysterical. I thought I heard... Now his cheeks were truly flushed. I couldn't tell if it was from arousal or shame. Maybe both. I recovered quickly.
Don't be crude, Cain. I'm just sore. Doggin is teaching me to sword fight. Haven't you ever had a sore muscle?
Or were you born looking stones carved? Ugh, I was overdoing it. He relaxed a bit and his wolfish grin returned. He leaned against the wall. Someone's spirited this morning. I shook my head and closed my eyes, lying back in the tub. I let the warm water rise up around my neck and calm me down before I looked at him again. Smells nice. He wandered closer but kept a respectful distance. I wasn't sure if I appreciated that or hated it more than anything. The salts are scented with white lilies. They're my favorite flower. He smiled a new smile, a relaxed and pleasant look I rarely saw on him. It took my breath away. We don't get many of those here in Onyx.
I know, I said. My mother told me they only bloom in amber. That's why it's my middle name. She said I was born surrounded by them.
Arwen Lily Valindale, he mused. My name on his lips was like a prayer, if a prayer could be sensual. It was nearly enough to make me whimper. I cleared my throat. How do you know my surname? He clucked his tongue, shaking his head in playful reprimand, and my breasts tightened in response.
Damn him. He shouldn't do anything that made me look at his mouth.
You think I let prisoners roam free in my keep without doing my research? He sauntered closer, and my lower stomach clenched. I was still so naked. He had to go. Last time I checked, the tub was a private space, not a common room. Why were you in my quarters in the first place? Cain inched toward me farther and knelt so as to not see inside the tub. When we were at eye level, he said, I wanted to ask. He scratched at his jaw. A terrible thought occurred to me too late. Did he know it had been Mari and me in his study? Was that why he was here? Had he realized Briar's amulet was missing? I tried to make my face appear indifferent. He sighed. If you might join me for something tomorrow night, I think it may help you understand this kingdom a bit more. Surprised was an understatement. I dipped a little lower in the tub to buy some time.
Why should I?
Because I am telling you to. I scowled. He laughed a warm and genuine laugh, like I was hilarious. Yeah, I didn't think that would mean much. How about because it will ease your insatiable curiosity about me and this kingdom and the war that you have so many opinions on?
Fine.
I nearly smiled. He had me there. Good. He grinned. I'll have Barney bring you. I turned, reaching for my robes behind me,
when I heard his sharp inhale. I spun back to him and waited for whatever was on the tip of his tongue, but I already knew what was coming. He looked stricken.
"You have scars."
He said it like he could break iron with his fists. Despite the hot water, a shiver ran across my back. "Yes," was all I could manage. That was not a part of my life I wanted to share with anyone, especially him.
"Who did that to you?"
he said in a low tone I could barely hear. Images of Powell and his belt assaulted my mind's eye. I flushed.
"It was a long time ago."
As if he could see what the memories did to me, he didn't push further, for which I was grateful. Instead, he swallowed and held my eyes. When I didn't look away, he leaned slightly closer, his expression one I couldn't read. His jaw was still as hard as granite. The space between us pulsed with slow, agonizing energy. My core still ached. Our faces were far too close for how naked I was, and how near to coming I had been mere moments ago. I could smell his leathery, woodsy scent, and it was mind-altering. I drew my tongue across my bottom lip and watched him follow the movement with something like a wince, as if the movement pained him. His eyes had gone fully black, all pupil, not an ounce of the slate gray that usually stared back at me. They followed a line down the column of my neck, to my collarbone, to where my breasts were pushed together underneath my folded arms. His lips parted slightly. But he didn't look lower, and I felt both relief and disappointment. I angled my face up toward him. I wanted him to kiss me. I could admit it to myself. I wanted his lips on mine more than I wanted my next breath. But his brows creased, and he shook his head, cleared his throat, and stood up. "I'm sorry," he said, before walking out of the washroom without another word and leaving me breathless. 14. I followed Barney out into the sea of tents. A wide and shining harvest moon hung in the crisp night sky, and it glowed on his soft, familiar face. I was stunned to realize I had missed the sweet, doughy man. I had borrowed a dress from Mari and a few of the black ribbons so often found in Onyx women's hair. I had no idea what Kane wanted me to see, and neither did she. She had mused that maybe he was going to bring me to the front lines and show me the realities of war so I could see why he ruled so cruelly. I couldn't imagine anything more terrible. Dagen had been even less helpful this morning. I only revealed that the king had asked me to join him for something that evening, and of course left out all of the needy wanting and aggressive eye contact that seemed to overcome the two of us the past few days. I had a feeling Dagen knew something else was going on, though. Every time I spoke of Kane, my cheeks grew hot. When I had asked if he knew why the king might wish for me to join him tonight, he only rolled his eyes and left me alone in the apothecary for the rest of the day. Reminder, do not ask Dagen for relationship advice. The sound of fire crackling in my ears, Barney and I passed by men cooking pots of stew, dealing cards, and drinking ale. The soldiers who had seemed so fearsome to me just a few weeks ago now seemed like Ryder and his friends, playful, boyish, and all too young. We rounded a boisterous corner and came across a tall, pitch-black tent. It was more like a pavilion, adorned with silver filigree around the entrance and banners on each side with the onyx emblem. I recognized the area, and nausea flitted through me. Behind us was the exact spot where Bert had tried to assault me. Kane must have been in this very tent the night he heard my struggle. I shuddered, thinking of what might have happened had he not been there. Begrudging gratitude had blossomed inside me toward my training. Had I had a sword with me that night and known how to wield it, I could have at least been able to fight back. The tent was not at all what I expected upon entering. In the middle of the room sat a sizable textured map of Evendel, with various pieces representing each kingdom's many battalions spread about. Leather chairs and furs in an array of sand and chocolate shades filled the rest of the space, as well as Gothic lanterns and black taper candles that bathed the room in streaks of butterscotch light. Men and women held copper chalices and ate clover bread, chicken, and steak. Ginger, citrus, rum, and cloves wafted through the air, mingling with gardenia and lilac, the most common onyx flowers I'd discovered. The glowing lights made for a warm, pleasant ambience. I realized belatedly that I was pressing my hands to my heart in awe and excitement. Barney guided me over to Cain, sitting on a velvet throne. To his side was a man with dark skin and a strong jaw, whom I didn't recognize.
Lady Arwen, Your Majesty?
Cain stood to greet me. Tonight, he was dressed as a true king. Black robes, a few silver rings, hair slicked back, and a delicate crown of onyx branches encircling his head. He was breathtaking. I swallowed any residual embarrassment at our almost kiss in my washroom yesterday and greeted him with a simple curtsy. Cain examined me with a slow sweep from my boots to my black ribbon, a spark dancing in his eyes. I wondered if he noticed that I was dressed like one of them. But his usual playfulness and charm were absent tonight. No flirtatious comments, no witty banter.
"I'm glad you could join us," he said. "I'll just be a minute. Please, sit."
He motioned to the plum velvet chair beside him before resuming a heated conversation with the man to his right. I fought against the urge to look out at the small sea of nobles that filled the tent. Their eyes, curious but also territorial, bored into my back like the pointed ends of 100 swords. Instead, I looked to my other side, where my biggest fan, Griffin, sat. I wanted to ask him or Cain exactly what this was, but he, too, was entangled in a conversation I feared interrupting. I found myself wishing Barney were still here. Staring at my hands, I turned my ears to the conversations around me. Cain was discussing the Opal Territory's peace treaty, but I could only pick up on a word here or there. The room was growing noisy and restless. To my left, Griffin was engaged in a surprisingly jovial discussion with a beautiful blonde woman. It was fascinating to see Griffin laugh when he had always been so stoic around me. He actually had a warm and friendly smile when he chose to show it.
"Wild, right?"
I turned to Cain. I think it's the first time I've seen his teeth, other than when he's baring them at me, at least. Cain smirked, but it didn't reach his eyes. Something was clearly on his mind tonight.
"As I said, it's not you, it's me."
I hummed my understanding, but didn't say more. Griffin and Cain might not have been brothers, but clearly there was some deep-rooted, almost familial tension between them that I had no intention of getting involved in. The commander in question stood, and the crowd of chattering dignitaries quieted, turning their attention to him.
"Tonight's forum is regarding the Opal Territories," he said. "Amber has been running soldiers through Opal's Midnight Pass illegally. They're getting to our men quicker because of it."
My heart dropped into my stomach with a thud. Oh no. My eyes flashed to Cain, but his were trained on his commander. I racked my brain for what I knew about the Midnight Pass, the treaty. This was information I had learned as a kid in childhood classes. Opal's land was free and clear of any one ruler. It was a wild and rocky place, with many different groups and divisions. If I recalled correctly, decades ago, the territories had collectively signed a peace treaty with the other 8 kingdoms that declared them neutral in any wartime event. Unfortunately, both Opal and Peridot were right in the middle of Amber and Onyx's conflict. Soldiers from both sides had to go around via the Mineral Sea and the Quartz of Rose, both of which took much longer than just cutting a straight line through Opal. My excitement at joining this forum had rapidly soured in my stomach, warping into grave concern. What would they do to the Amber soldiers? How ruthless would they be? Or did they not care? Maybe it was Opal's problem to deal with.
"Thank you all for joining us," Griffin finished. "The forum is now open."
Almost immediately, a portly man with an impressive beard stood.
"My king, I've said this before, but I'll say it again gladly. If Amber can break the territory's rules with no consequences, so can we. Let's get our men in there tonight, even the playing field. There's no time to discuss alternatives."
The blonde woman sitting next to Griffin scoffed, standing up and facing Kane. Her eyes were pleading.
"Your Majesty, with all due respect to Sir Philip, Amber's actions are not without consequence. My spies have heard that the territories are launching an attack on King Gareth any day now, in retribution for using their land as a shortcut and going against the treaty. That will help our cause. Let us not end up on the receiving end of their fury, too."
Sir Philip dragged a hand down his face. It seemed these two may have had this argument before.
"If we go in there," she continued, "we will only bring danger to this kingdom and cause more blood to be shed in Opal."
Kane spoke for the first time.
"Lady Cleo is right. We don't go through Opal out of respect, not fear. Amber may be bastards, but we aren't."
Opal had created the treaty to keep their lands and people safe. I didn't believe Gareth would disregard that for his own gain. That sounded more like Kane, if anyone. The man next to Kane stood, his baritone voice rumbling through the forum and commanding attention.
"I have advised our king to meet with the various tribe and division leaders to enact a new treaty, allowing only Onyx safe passage. If we want to send a wave of troops to meet Amber, we will need their help."
Both Sir Philip and Lady Cleo rolled their eyes at this, almost in unison. Cleo spoke first.
"Lieutenant Eardley, tracking each leader down, even with our best intelligence officers, will take months. It's time we don't have."
Unease churned in my gut. I didn't want to hurt my kingdom, but I did want to help avoid more bloodshed altogether. The lack of dignitaries standing up against Philip's plan for carnage worried me. If they utilized his plan, thousands of Onyx, Opal, and Amber lives would be lost within the next few days. But the predicament did remind me of something. It was a stretch, but when I didn't want a medication to hit the nervous system too quickly, I'd put certain herbs or elements into my concoctions to act as blockers, allowing the medication to find other routes through the body and the effects to last longer for the patient. That was what Onyx needed, something to block the Amber soldiers, forcing them to abandon the pass. If going through Opal took the same amount of time as the other routes, they'd stop seeing it as a shortcut and leave the territory altogether. My eyes cut to Kane. Leaning back, ankle crossed over his knee, fingers steepled in his lap, he was the epitome of calm. I had to admit I was wrong about the way I assumed he ran his kingdom. He was giving every noble, lieutenant, and dignitary in his court a chance to voice their thoughts and come up with a decision together. It was surprisingly fair. As if he could sense my staring, Kane turned and caught my eye. He waggled his fingers at me in a coy wave. I smiled but shook my head. I wasn't saying hello. I motioned to the group and then pointed at myself. He raised an eyebrow but nodded once in suspicious approval. My stomach made a little heave of anxiety, and I fisted my hands in my dress to suppress their shaking. When a curly-haired older woman had finished making her point about stationing Onyx men at the border of Opal and Amber, and Griffin had shot that down as a waste of their troops, I took in one more deep breath and stood.
"Good evening," I started. The room was silent. Everyone seemed to look to Kane for his endorsement. I turned to him as well. He watched me with the same detached expression that he had held throughout the entire forum, but didn't make a move to stop me.
"I have no military training," I said,
turning back to the small crowd. I'm not nobility, and I've only seen 2 maps of our continent in my life. Beside me, Griffin placed his head in his hands. Kane stifled a laugh at his commander.
What are you doing here, then?
Asked a gruff voice from the other side of the tent. Voices tittered with humor, and I strained but couldn't see who had said it. My cheeks heated, sweat prickling at my hairline. Kane shot the man a look of pure venom.
I don't believe the lady was finished speaking. You'd be wise to watch your tongue in her presence.
Deadly silence followed. But his words bolstered me, and I continued, voice a little less wobbly this time. It could be fruitful to render the midnight pass ineffective. Despite there being no moisture in my mouth or throat whatsoever, I tried in vain to swallow. I waited for the rumble of disagreements I knew was coming, but all I could feel were their eyes lingering on me, waiting for me to continue. There was no way to look at Kane for some kind of approval without showing weakness. And I didn't need to. This was a good idea. I knew it was. Not only would this stop Amber soldiers from getting to our borders faster than we can get to theirs, but it would be doing the Opal territories a favor. We'd be keeping war out of their land for free, and later down the line, they might be happy to do us a favor in return.
We can use the dragon and our hydras, a nobleman added from my right. It'll be faster and more covert than having a battalion transport the blockade.
Our ore deposits will work to block the pass. They'll never have enough manpower to move them out of the way, Griffin added, deep in thought. Pride warmed my bones as I sat. I couldn't help looking at Kane now. He continued to watch the discussion play out, but shot me a small nod, a smile twinkling in his eyes. Cleo stood next.
Thank you, Arwen, I supplied.
Thank you, Arwen, she smiled. It's not a bad idea. I have some spies in Opal as we speak. They could track down. Cleo was interrupted by heavy boots marching toward the tent. Murmurs of concern danced through the forum, and I felt dread pull low and deep in my stomach. 7 fully armored Onyx soldiers pushed through the tent's flaps and marched straight through the forum on a track toward Kane. The king shot out of his chair with something I had never seen in his eyes before. Pure fear. My throat had constricted, and I fought to swallow nothing at all. The soldier whose armor was studded with silver spoke to Kane in hushed tones. I recognized the armor, but not the man, and realized he must have taken Lieutenant Burt's position. I waited and waited and waited. The atmosphere crackled with horrific anticipation. But as soon as they exchanged a few words, Kane's shoulders relaxed, and mine followed suit. Whatever was happening, it wasn't what he dreaded. The fleeting relief came and went before Kane faced the forum.
Enough for tonight. Lady Cleo, see to it that your spies make sure the pass is cleared. Utilize Eric's if need be. My men will begin to harvest and transport the ore.
With that, the entire tent cleared out in a matter of minutes, leaving only Kane, Griffin, Lieutenant Eardley, and the soldiers. And me. Griffin ordered men to cover up the war table. I waited for someone to tell me what to do or where to go, but no instruction came. Kane nodded to the lieutenant, who left the tent and returned with 3 more Onyx soldiers. The sight before me filled my stomach with a twisted queasiness, and I dug my fingernails into the wooden arms of my chair. Each soldier held a man whose arms and legs were bound by chains and with the sack hanging over his head. I drew in a quick breath. Prisoners. They were prisoners of war. Kane turned his attention to the men forced to their knees in front of him. The lieutenant cleared his throat.
These 3 Amber soldiers were found in our keep, trying to access the vault. They killed 6 of our men and 3 bystanders. I believe them to be a specialized team of King Gareth's. How do you wish to proceed, my king?
Kane's face was pure steel. Cool, calm fury. Not a single ounce of the man I had come to know was left. He looked like death and violence personified, and fear rippled through me. Not for myself, but for the men who knelt before him.
"Off,"
he commanded, and the soldiers removed the men's hoods. I nearly fainted. Before me, dirtied, nose bloodied, and wincing in agony, was Halden. 15. Without thinking, I moved toward him, hands outstretched. No, 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 no. Griffin grabbed me by the arm, yanking me backward. "What do you think you're doing?" he whispered. I felt frantic. The tent was far too hot, the candles suffocating. "I know him," I whispered back. "He's a friend. There has to be some kind of mistake." I couldn't believe he was alive, and here in Onyx, and imprisoned, and... Griffin's hold on my arm tightened. "You have to get out of here, now." He stepped in front of me, shielding me behind him, but it was too late.
"Arwen?" croaked Halden.
His hair was a dirty mop on his head, painted red with blood. His nose was swollen, his cheek bruised, but his brown eyes looked just as they had the day he left for battle. Round, sincere, and pained.
"Shut up."
The soldier behind him smacked Halden across the back of his head. "Stop that!" I couldn't stand to see him like this. I lunged forward again. Kane whirled to me.
"You know this boy?"
Before I could speak, Halden answered.
"She was going to be my wife."
I went still. The entire tent did.
"Halden, you stone-stammed idiot."
Kane looked positively livid, and even Griffin had gone pale. "No, that's not... It's not exactly..." Words were not coming to my brain in time. Kane didn't even wait for me to finish. He stalked over to Halden, eerily calm.
"You love this woman?"
Halden looked right at me with fervor.
"More than anything.
Bleeding stones." Kane nodded curtly.
"Good."
Then he looked to the soldiers behind Halden.
"Kill him."
"No!" I shouted. Did anyone else hear that ringing in their ears? What was happening right now? "Are you out of your mind?" I pleaded. But Kane had stopped looking at me. He sauntered over to his leather chair and picked up a glass of dark liquid, sipping slowly. Leisurely, as I struggled for air. The soldiers began to drag Halden and the other two young men away.
"Stop!" I raged. "Right now!"
But Griffin's hold on my arm was like a metal cuff. He wasn't even straining to keep me in place. Kane studied my face, cold and unfeeling as tears brimmed in my eyes. The boy to Halden's right began to plead, and the one on his left loosed urine down his leg as he shook. Kane said nothing as I wailed in earnest.
"No, no, no, please, no."
Finally, Griffin interjected.
"My king, may I suggest we discuss the benefits of keeping even one of these rodents alive? They may have some information of value. Shall we let them rot in the dungeon while we confer?"
Kane rolled his eyes and tensed his jaw, taking another sip of his drink. But eventually, he nodded to the lieutenant.
"As the commander wishes, take them to the dungeons for now."
All three prisoners let out tandem exhales. Halden's eyes never left mine. He mouthed something to me before being pulled out of the tent, but I couldn't see through the blur of salt water in my eyes. Kane seemed to catch whatever it was, though, and sneered in disgust.
"Everyone out,"
Kane said with a snarl. The room quickly emptied, leaving just him, Griffin, and myself. I was going to pummel Kane's cruel, bored face. Griffin let go of my arm, and I launched myself at him.
"You are a monster. What is wrong with you?" I seethed. "You were going to kill those boys? They're barely men. And you knew I knew him, cared for him. I can't even look at you."
I just barely managed to stop myself from throwing my fist into his jaw. I would not stoop to his level again.
Kane studied me with indifference. The only signs of his rage were his hands balled into fists, the skin of his knuckles white with pressure.
They killed my men. They killed innocents. That doesn't bother you?
He asked with quiet venom. I shook my head. You don't know anything for sure. You sentenced them to die without a second thought. How can anyone who rules a kingdom be so impulsive?
The healer's right, actually, Griffin interrupted. That was supremely stupid, my friend.
I couldn't believe my ears. Thank you. I turned back to the king, emphatic. We can't just kill people whenever we feel like it, Kane.
Griffin shook his head. No, now we absolutely have to kill them.
Exactly. Wait, what? I spun back to Griffin. Why?
Griffin sighed and poured himself a glass of whiskey. Kane just showed his hand. Your lover tested him, and he failed. Now all three men know that the king of the Onyx Kingdom cares for his healer, and that gives Kane a weakness. They can't live knowing that information. I'm sorry.
My head was swimming. There was far too much going on. Was Griffin right? Was Kane's violence due to Halden's implication that he and I had been in love back in Abington? And did Halden do that on purpose, in hopes of saving his own skin? Did he know, somehow, in just the few minutes he was in here, that Kane valued me?
I was an idiot.
Of course he did. Why else would I be in this tent with the king's army, seated directly next to Kane, draped in an onyx dress, black ribbons in my hair, sipping lavender whiskey with the rest of them? Unless Kane had valued me. I was a dirty traitor. I slumped down into a leather chair and stared at the floor. Kane turned to Griffin.
They were dead men walking, regardless. If they made it to the vault, they already know too much to be allowed to go back to Gareth.
I began to weep. I couldn't help it. I hadn't thought of Halden at all in quite some time, but that didn't mean I wanted to see him dead.
It was too horrible to fathom, the ending of his life, and it somehow being my fault.
Kane considered me with a quiet rage.
I'm sorry, Arwen, about the man you love.
I peered up at him through tears, furious. I never said I was in love with him. He is one of my oldest friends from childhood, one of my brother's best friends.
No wonder he's a thief, too, Griffin mumbled into his drink. I ignored him.
He's like family, I continued. I haven't seen him since the day he was sent off to battle your soldiers in your bleeding, pointless war. I was getting hysterical, my pulse ratcheting up in my ears.
But he's in love with you and plans to wed you?
Kane pressed. That's not the point.
I'm curious.
Too bad, I thought. But I took a deep breath. If there was ever a time to coax out the best part of Kane, the version of him from our day in the pond, it was this very moment. Yes, fine. We were romantic. But then he left, and I didn't think I'd ever see him again. I thought it was just for fun, not that he ever thought that way about me.
Kane softened slightly. How could he not?
Please, I begged. Don't kill him.
Griffin looked nauseated. I think it's time the healer returned to her quarters, don't you?
After a fitful night of sleep, I woke before daybreak and made my way down the stairs. My cloak fought against the morning chill, and I blew hot air into my hands. I had smuggled a few slices of bread, some dried meats, a needle, and some bandages with me, and wrapped them in the fur draped around my body. I had to find a way to see Halden, and I figured sticking as close to the truth as possible was likely my best way in. Morning, I chirped to the young guard on duty. Just visiting the prisoner.
Which prisoner?
I feigned confusion. Mathis, the one with the festering wound. Enough time spent in a kingdom run by a liar, and the lies were coming to me easily now.
Who are you again?
I'm Arwen, the healer. Commander Griffin sent me here to stitch Mathis up.
I waved my medical supplies at the guard. His brows knit together, lips pursed in doubt.
All right, suit yourself, I said with a sigh. I don't want to be working this early anyway.
I turned to leave, then spun around. If Mathis dies of blood loss before they can get information out of him, just tell Commander Griffin you didn't recognize the prison healer. I'm sure he'll understand. He's such a warm, forgiving man. I started walking and held my breath. After a slew of grumbling, the guard finally shouted after me. Fine, fine, just make it quick. I was delighted, but plastered a mask of boredom on my face before turning around.
Thanks, shouldn't be too long.
Inside, the cells were as soggy and miserable as I remembered. My heart ached for Halden. It had been the most hopeless I had ever felt inside these walls. I found his cell faster than I could have hoped. His white blonde hair stood out among all the gray. He was sleeping in a heap, shivering and caked in dried blood. I hissed his name until he woke with a start.
Arwen, what are you doing here?
He looked dreadful. His eye was now swollen shut, and a bruise the size of a squash blossomed on his chin.
I brought you some things.
I pulled out the contraband and slipped it through the bars, not unlike what Kane had done for me so long ago. I pushed the memory from my mind. Halden reached for the bundle, and his bruised knuckles brushed over my fingers. My hands itched to hold him, to comfort him.
Thank you.
He looked over the items and tucked them behind a bucket.
But I didn't mean, what are you doing down here in the cells? How did you end up at the Onyx Kingdom's outpost?
It's a long story, but I'm safe. I'll tell you all about it when we have more time.
I doubt I have much time left at all.
Don't think like that. We'll figure something out. He studied me curiously.
You seem different.